Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Cult Talk with Aaron Martin, a conversation, not an investigation. Cult Talk is a podcast that explores the realities of cult life, how they operate, who joins them, why people stay, and how some members eventually find their way out. Season 1 of Cult Talk will focus on a little-known cult called the Kobu, which stands for the Church of Bible Understanding, led by Stuart Traill. In this third episode of Cult Talk, my mom continues telling the story of what life in the Kobu was like. She talks about the slow drip that starts happening, especially when you form your own family unit and start questioning the bigger communal living environment and the leader who is telling you things that you don't quite agree with anymore. She also talks about questioning Stuart himself and thinking, why can't he be a kinder, gentler leader when she experiences meeting another minister who comes to share some ideas with the group at what they call a big meeting. Also, Stuart gets divorced from his first wife, Shirley. My mom discusses how this went down and what the group's reaction to it was.
This time, I want to know about, so the guys were working all day, up all night. Were you in those meetings too with the children? Were you guys just, what were the women doing?
We would go to the meetings.
At night?
At night. Now, at first, everybody had the kids there, and then it was too much. So then once everybody had their lofts and stuff, we would have people stay with the kids, and then, you know, we'd still go to the meetings. So you had to sit through the whole thing too.
How long were these meetings?
Hours. Hours and
like
hours
6 hours.
Well, you figure maybe 6 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night. And I mean, sometimes they went till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my God.
And it was usually not fun.
It was like public humiliation.
And you just would pray like, don't pick on me. Don't say my name. I'm not going to look. I'm going to, you know, look over here and, you know.
So were you starting to get an inkling like this is not for me? Or was dad? Or was anyone?
Oh, yeah.
Or did you guys never, like, were people just not allowed to talk about it?
Oh, no, they talked about it.
The brothers did.
Okay. And people that we ended up being close friends with for years after that.
Well, you guys all left. Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, we keep saying brothers and sisters. That's mm-hmm. what Stuart wanted you guys to call each
right.
other.
But we wouldn't address each other that way. Good morning, Sister Ruth.
Right.
But if it was something, we'd say, well, the brothers have gone over here and the sisters are going to go do this or whatever.
So what were the sisters doing? Well, I remember it being really fun.
It was.
But you guys were probably working to your knuckles. I mean, I don't know.
We weren't working,
remember having a lot of fun.
We weren't working outside of the fellowship like the men were. Now, some women went and got jobs, like single women, because they didn't, you know, they had to like participate somehow. So some people went and got jobs. I had a job at a grocery store in a Spanish district for a real short time. And that was right before we left the first time. We would just do things with the kids. We'd get everybody all washed up and dressed, and we had a little kiddie pool. We'd play out there.
I remember that. Yeah. I remember taking a bath in a huge industrial sink.
A big tub type thing.
A big, huge tub like that you would wash, like, I don't even know, industrial equipment or something. Because these were used to be factories.
This is what used to bother me too, because those lofts were not rented by us. They were like the guy that I said, oh my gosh, he's an accountant. There were people like that had some life experience that were now working and doing things for the Kobu. And they would rent to them. Unbeknownst to these people, they were subletting to have like 20 people and their kids live in their loft. And they were leaving maybe to go study art in England for a year.
Oh.
You get what I'm saying?
So you guys weren't even supposed to be there.
Well,
really,
not
legally.
All of us, I'm sure. And I remember thinking, that's not right.
Right.
Because it's underhanded and it's lying.
But you guys were living in pretty bad conditions.
Not all the time. No, not the lofts were pretty good. We ended up leaving from Manhattan. When we came back, the second time and stayed a very short time and then left. We ended up living in Brooklyn and we actually had our own little apartment.
Yeah.
But we had meetings in that apartment.
Most of my memories are from the loft space. And it's probably because it felt like summer camp. And we weren't getting worked to death or anything. We were just like living our lives.
We'd go to the grocery store. We went to a lot of parks.
I remember going to a lot of parks and singing. Now, were you guys also asked to witness to other people during like your child care times, or were the women not really doing what the men were doing? Because the men were carpet cleaning, but also during their carpet cleaning, trying to save people.
If we were out and about, we would hand out tracts and
you
talk
did.
To people.
Okay. Yep.
And the singing had, that was like, oh gosh, we really are becoming like grownups in a church, but not the church sense that we didn't care for. But we started like learning songs and singing, and like Stuart said it was okay that we sang, and it was like, ooh.
Like he allowed you to sing?
Yes.
We were also wearing those huge Get Smart, Get Saved buttons.
Right.
I remember them being on my little baby clothes and pictures and stuff, and you guys were wearing those?
That's because he had that. You had to, if you came in the group, there were certain verses, just basic verses that you learned. If you learned them and memorized, then you got your button. It was sort of like the Girl Scouts.
except not at all.
Yeah, and no campfire songs.
Make new friends, but don't keep the old.
Oh, my word.
If you can't laugh about it, you'll cry.
Well, the thing is, it's like, you know, we're talking about like, this and that. And people are listening, probably just horrified. That's why I'm so interested when I read these books and I see a Leah Remini show and you're like, you really thought it was okay.
Well, it's a slow drip. And, you know, and even the people I've talked to at Nexium, which is the one now in the news, it's like they don't go, they say that you don't go from selling business empowerment seminars, which is what they were doing, or self-improvement seminars, to branding, to human branding. It's a long process.
It is.
So it's not like you just jump into the crazy.
Right.
And you guys also, well, you end up having friends for life. I think maybe situations like that bond you together too.
Right.
Would you say it like, you're not sure what's going on. You think you're doing something good. You're starting to get weird feelings, but then you grow closer to the people you're in it with.
Right.
Because you're all sort of in that space.
Right. But if somebody leaves, it's like, oh, don't talk to them, you know? And then after we left, it turned out like those people that had left were fine. It's keeping you insulated. I'm sorry, not insulated, isolated.
Isolated. Yeah, it's like the total institution idea. It's your employer. It's your religion. It's your friend group. It's your family. It's your housing. It's your food. There's nothing that you're not getting from the group.
Right.
And so you can't quit any one thing.
Right.
Like some people move apartments, or some people quit their job, or even get a divorce.
Right.
Or lose custody of their child,
but
or whatever.
But they got something outside.
But it's not all 24
things
at once.
That's only one out of the five.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it's a big, that's why I always felt more sorry for the people who were single. That's why that started to get discouraged, because there are safety in numbers. And, you know, you're married and you have a child and maybe you have a second child or a third child. And now you're a family unit. And it turns out that, you know, maybe this isn't the best thing for us. But when you leave, you're still a family unit. When you're single, you may have still have a relationship with people outside. As time goes by, less and less. First of all, because you don't have time to stay in touch, it's discouraged. And then thirdly, you can't explain it because they won't understand, because we're such pure and knowledgeable Christians. They just won't understand. The truth of it is that some of it's so odd, you don't want to tell them. James LaRue.
Right.
You know, it's like,
you start getting embarrassed.
Yeah, right.
And you don't even want to have people come in. You're
people
like, yeah, we didn't witness to anyone today.
Yeah.
Tony Natale, who I interviewed, who was the ex-girlfriend of Keith Raniere.
Right.
She said it almost made me cry when she said it. But she was saying the reason people have the strength to get out of cults is because of a mother's love, usually.
Right.
Because your allegiances change. So having children or having a mother outside, like you being a mother or having a mother outside who still cares for you, like in Catherine Oxenberg's case with India, her daughter who was in Nexium.
Right.
Or Tony, her case of having a son, like she was a mother. She said it's all about this mother instinct that kind of gives you this almost primal instinct, like I can't do this anymore because, and I was like, that's totally true, because you had both. You became a mother young to me.
Right.
And then you had your mom.
Right.
Whereas some people didn't have either of those things.
No.
And I feel like that is like the perfect situation to help you be like, you know what? Yeah, I'm good.
I need to be here and
totally.
I feel all guilty. Like, you don't care if you feel guilty or not, because your child's just getting ready to run in front of a car.
Exactly.
So it's like, you know, who cares how I feel?
Right.
You know, so
it's way more primal than being part of a group. It's like, that's your group.
Absolutely.
Your family
is. And that's why most of the people that left that we stayed in touch with had families, were married and had one, two, or three kids.
They did.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
One of the things that was a turning point for me, and I think a lot of people, and I can't remember, this is before New York City. Reverend Wormbrand, which James LaRue mentions, he mentions him and David Wilkerson, because we didn't watch TV or read books or anything. If you just came in with a book, people were like, what are you reading? And they would tell, he's reading this or that. Oh, really? But I mean, it was just so
there was like a
crazy
tattletale mentality.
Oh, yeah, it was crazy. We were allowed to read, not allowed, but it was encouraged. I know I sound like a flaming idiot. We were allowed to read The Cross and the Switchblade by David Wilkerson, which is very old, but it was a good. It was about the gangs of New York, and David Wilkerson still was in New York City and ministering that all this time. Stuart found out about Reverend Wormbrand, who actually was from Romania and had gone into a prison camp for being a Christian with the communists when the communists started going into Hungary and Romania after World War II. Mm-hmm. This is like 1948 or whatever. And I can't remember the book. I even looked online and I'm like, it was Tortured for Your Faith, Tortured for Christ. There were a couple different ones. His wife also got arrested because he said, you can't have communism and Christianity. The two will never go together because mm-hmm. one is you're all is for the state or you're all is for, you know.
Right.
So he got arrested. He was in work camps for years and stuff. So Stuart started talking about this book and we're like, oh, cool. So we all read it and loved it because it was like a person who really, you know, gave their life and loved God and his family. And I love the waltz, the Blue Danube. Mm-hmm. I love this song, but every time I hear it, I think of his wife because they were building some type of locks or dam in the Blue Danube in like 30 below zero weather. And like people lost their feet and their hand. I mean, they were really tortured.
Wow.
You know, so I think part of that, this is good. I'm really going out there. It was like, so you only sleep in 2 hours a night and working and stuff. This is so bad.
So Stuart was telling you, like, this is what real torture
without
looks like.
Without saying it.
So yeah. You guys need to stop complaining.
Quit being pansies.
Because you guys weren't in a Russian gulag.
Right. Even though this was actually before Manhattan, right before Manhattan.
Right. Okay.
So Reverend Wormbrand ended up coming to one of our big meetings. And these were the meetings that we would go to. And we actually started having to rent like warehouses and stuff to have them in.
And everybody would bring sleeping bags sleep
and
there.
And the kids had a separate room. You know, we'd have kids, everything for the nursery, for the children and stuff. And he came and he actually had to sit in a chair and had to have a stool for his feet. I mean, because he had been tortured and all kinds of things. And his wife came and he was wonderful. It was, and there's Stuart sitting there, who was very respectful of him.
Oh, he was?
Oh, yeah, because he got him to come.
I know, but you never know.
No, and I'm sure this guy's going, where have they brought me to? He's right. Used to going to churches and different things. He was so beautiful. He was so loving and kind and wonderful. And I remember after he finished, everybody was just so thrilled. And I remember everybody thinking, that's how Stuart should be.
Right. Like, what the hell are we doing?
No kidding. That was a big, and for a lot of the brothers, I remember a lot of our friends and stuff were like, I wish he was, you know, you got to see the comparison, which Stuart would never allow before mm-hmm. because everybody was crazier. They were wrong and they were just milquetoast and they were watered down Christians and we're the only ones that are really fighting the good fight. And, you know, well, this guy had fought the good fight and lived on to tell it. I don't know, like things like that, like I think sometimes make people pure. Mm-hmm. That's how he seemed. He was just wonderful.
Did anyone ever like say these things behind closed doors?
Oh, then? Yeah, to each other. Oh, yeah.
Did anyone stand up to Stuart at a meeting? Did you ever see a confrontation happen?
Not about something like that. You wouldn't have somebody stand up and go, wow, he was really wonderful. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. I mean, but in other meetings, did anybody ever stand up and say, I'm just not doing this anymore. I'm out of here. Like, you guys weren't on lockdown. You could leave.
Oh, yeah, you could leave.
But would people leave quietly without saying anything?
Yeah, they just off.
Okay, they wouldn't have like a full brawl.
No, we just like took off in the middle of the night or something. But
right.
Now, when I read James LaRue's books, it sounded like people actually stood up and had confrontations.
Exactly.
And so, but it also sounded like they had a lot more freedoms. Like they would go places. I'm going to go over here and spend the day. And I went to the museum. You couldn't do that back then. All the brothers were together. Nobody could go off the beaten path. Everybody was accounted for. And, mm-hmm. So it was a little bit tighter that way. And
okay.
You saw and met with him every night, not once a week or once a month. At some point, it says they didn't see him for 2 months. And I'm like, well, what kept everybody there,
Right. So there's not a physical control. It's not like you're locked in a place. It's a mind control.
Correct.
And feeling like you have to do this because.
Right. Because this is what you're called to do. This is the true road for Christianity.
And Stuart is telling you you're going to go to hell and you're going to be lost forever and that everyone else is wrong except for your core group.
Because we're in the purest way. Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, is I found out later through, I keep naming James LaRue.
I know. You really like his book.
Because he has a lot of what I don't know about.
Yeah.
I am the before and he's the after.
He's the after.
He pointed out that Reverend Wormbrand, later on said that he thought Stuart was severely, maybe I'm not using the right adjective, but severely backslidden. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so he did figure out that Stuart was like weird and the whole thing was very odd,
Well, and it became more of a dichotomy, Stuart's lifestyle versus the people mm-hmm. in Kobu mm-hmm. later. But you even started seeing that mm-hmm. because all of a sudden Stuart, first of all, was leaving his wife mm-hmm. for a younger woman.
And that was around that same time of that meeting with Wormbrand.
Yes.
I don't know if it was before or after or what.
So let's actually get into who Stuart was with his wives and his family and how he was living compared to you guys. So what was the deal? He was married to Shirley for a number of years. That's
right.
Who he started the Forever family with.
Right.
He had how many kids? Three? Four?
A handful
of kids.
He had, I think, four.
I feel like it was four, but we could,
right.
I look that up
right.
and correct it if we're wrong. Shirley was this girl, the woman who he found in the orphanage. She was dressing
right.
in the really infantile Shirley Temple clothes and
right.
stuff like that. Very quiet. You never got to know her. Mm-hmm. Was she completely separate from the group?
Mm-hmm. Other people knew her that had been there longer, but I would say hi to her and she'd say hi. I never even hardly had a conversation with her.
Yeah.
I never really had a conversation with Stuart.
Right.
It's like, hello.
Who is he?
Which is, yeah.
What happened or how was it announced?
When we were all living out at different fellowship houses before we went to New York, everybody would go to these big meetings. And instead of it being in Allentown, because we were all out at different houses, the thing was growing and growing. So we would rent warehouses and we'd have a big meeting and everybody would go there. Well, he had someone else announce it, who I knew very well, and his wife.
Friends of ours?
Well, no. You didn't know them after. They lost touch. They ended up getting divorced. Most people are divorced. I think there's one or two couples that stayed married.
Most people from
through
your,
this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, not right away.
Yeah.
Even years later.
Mm-hmm.
He was always sort of like the second in charge. Like everybody looked up to him. And he had him announce it. Shirley had been unfaithful to him. And they weren't sure what they were going to do. She had the kids, but they were going to go try and steal the kids because that wasn't the situation they should be in. And everybody was like, oh my gosh, God and Shirley are getting divorced. I mean, it was just like, oh my goodness, Looking back, I'm like, no kidding, lady, And she took the kids just like Katie Holmes, smartest
right.
thing she ever did.
Right. But Shirley wasn't cheating on Stuart.
I don't believe so.
Right. And it turns out he was probably stepping out on her.
Yes.
There were several confrontations.
Right.
And during that time where Shirley freaked out on him.
Exactly. She would never publicly or to anybody in the group, she would never say anything against him.
Mm-hmm.
She was brainwashed. He took her out of an orphanage.
But she was planning her escape.
Right.
basically.
And everybody was just like in shock, and, you know, and the whole thing about having this other person announce it, who everybody trusted and really liked, Stuart like just sat there. And so it was almost...
Oh, Stuart was there sitting there while it was being announced?
It was the big meeting. It was like, you know.
Oh.
It's the big meeting.
Oh, no, Mom. it's the big...
It's like, see, now that's like a title. It's not just a big meeting. It's the title, the big meeting.
It's the big meeting.
Keep up.
So it's the big meeting. Stuart's sitting there like all dejected.
Yeah, and he's like just looking down.
He's selling through his friend is that Shirley cheated on him.
Yeah.
And they actually announced at that meeting they're going to try to go steal the kids.
Well, there's an issue with the kids and they have some lawyers involved. And I don't remember specifically, but I remember we were all like, you know, thinking, wow, he seems like human right now. I thought that. I don't know if anybody else was.
So that was the big meeting. Yeah, I'm sure everybody was.
Of course it was. Unless you were so deprived of sleep, you're sitting there falling asleep. Because people used to have to poke people to get them to wake up. It was awful. So the time frame's really not clear. But by the time we all get to Manhattan, Gail is now Stuart's
wife.
She may have been.
He married her really quickly after Shirley.
But I know that she was his, like, writing down every word that he uttered. Even if he's in a restaurant, he comes up with a brilliant thought and she would write it down, you know, and everybody, so it was like, oh, Gail, you know, he picked it. She's really something else. That was after Shirley, before we got to New York. Don't know when they got married, but I remember after the fact, the person who got up and told the whole thing and his wife, she had told me way later that was going on. That's one of the reasons.
What do you mean that was going on?
Him and Gail.
Were together before.
Before they got married.
Yeah, right.
And that they had like been witness to it and, you know, and
oh, I'm sure.
That's one of the reasons they left because most people weren't doing sneaky, creepy things.
Here's the issue. Yeah, the cult leader who is really diabolical and who's lying all the time is usually doing it to people who don't expect a liar.
Right.
Who aren't themselves lying.
Right.
You know, and so they are blinded by innocent thought, like, right. Oh, well, nobody would lie because we're not. And mm-hmm. We're all doing mm-hmm. it for the right reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
By the time we get to New York, Gail is now on the scene and his wife.
Gail is much younger.
Oh, yeah. She was younger than me.
22 or 21 or something.
If that,
right.
Yeah.
And by this time, Stuart is what, 40?
He looked like he was 55.
He looked like he was 100.
Yeah.
I mean, he was so straggly looking.
He had to be 30 years older.
Okay.
I would say
25
to 30. Yeah.
Than Gail.
Enough, yeah. Well, as he was older than Shirley. There's a difference of 10 years, but 17 and 27 or whatever is not the difference you want to hear. Maybe 37 and 47. Okay, that's fine. You know how that narrows as you get older. So
now she was also really thin.
She wasn't very attractive. She was a nice girl, but she wasn't very attractive.
Mom's just laying it all out there.
Well, neither was Shirley. Sorry.
No.
I
feel
think
free.
She probably had never been involved with a man before.
She probably just worshipped him because she was so young.
And Shirley had probably never been involved with a man before, if you know what I mean. And see, that's the MO of a pedophile.
Right. And then he ends up employing all of these, quote, Gail helpers.
See, that was after.
After you. Yeah, that was after you and Dad left.
Right.
And he ended up taking half-wives later.
See, I didn't know any of that.
Yeah. That was after you guys left.
Right.
Things started getting increasingly weird, though.
Well, yeah, and we can talk about that at some point because I ended up being one of the second group to go to Haiti and fly in the plane with them and some other sisters down to Haiti and how the whole Haiti thing came up and the orphanage. And
this is the church's mission in Haiti. They're still going on today and very sketchy.
Well,
so let's talk about that.
That sounds good.
Time. Okay.
We'll pause here for now, but join us for the continuing story on the next episode of Cult Talk. Also, join the listener conversation over on the Cult Talk with Aaron Martin Facebook page. Follow @CultTalk on Twitter and Instagram, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast from any platform and leave us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. Cult Talk is written and hosted by me, Aaron Martin, and produced by Dan McInerney. See the show notes attached to this episode for all links to resources and social media associated with Cult Talk.
Cool fact, A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.